Thank you very much. Well, I'm very thank you very much to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to discuss this interesting paper. This slide is an overview of your findings. I'm not going to repeat. I just want to highlight that, in my view, this is the most significant or the most interesting result, as you highlight also, that you obtain in the paper, that CTI adopters decrease systematic risk, because that means that the arrangement was successful from the prudential perspective. And I have divided your conclusions and implications that you claim in the paper into two type of conclusions, those which are more related with the prudential perspective and those which are more related with the accounting perspective. In fact, you say that you provide preliminary evidence of IFRS impairment model adoption, and you concrete afterwards which evidence you provide. And I want to focus my discussion on some of the claims you make in the paper in relation with this. And I want to contrast these claims with what you obtained from the accounting literature, which in a way could be in contradiction, at least debatable. Because that what I did, I selected, this is what I did, I selected three claims you make in the paper. These are the three claims, literally, they are in the paper as they are shown in the slide. First, you say at the beginning that IAS 39 impairment model was one of the major accounting failures, creating financial instability and intensifying the procyclicality of bank lending. The second claim I'm going to discuss is when you say that banks, instead of using the higher level of managerial discretion offered by the IFRS impairment model to manipulate impairments, they commit decreasing their risk-taking. And third, the third claim I'm going to analyze is when you say that the powerful bank authorities will not incentivize banks to engage in opportunistic behavior. So going to the first claim, when you say at the beginning that IAS 39 model was one of the major accounting failures creating financial instability and intensifying the procyclicality of bank lending, my question is, was it really one of the major accounting failures? Was this model, the incurred loss model, so implicated in the procyclicality and financial instability, as you say? Is IFRS 9 model going to solve this problem or a problem? And the answer I obtained from previous accounting literature, claims and evidence is no. First, I have to say that it was mainly bank supervisors and regulators who complained, not everybody, as you assume in the paper. But the first evidence I obtained from the analysis of the literature is that in most cases, the objectives of prudential and accounting regulators not just differ, as you say in the paper, but are in contradiction, at least in the short term. So why the accounting standard setters should meet the need of one set of users, in this example, bank regulators, at the expense of others, as for example, capital markets, when there are other sources of information apart from recognition in the financial statements, and also bank regulators can easily adjust the accounting figures to obtain the numbers for the purposes they have. That's the first one. The second one is that there's evidence that bank regulation might amplify procyclicality even more than accounting rules. So even they complain, they could be also the guilty. And third, the accounting impairment model is unlikely to play a major role from financial stability perspective. Why? Because there are two aspects, as you say, procyclicality and market discipline. And focusing on procyclicality, an expected loss model is by nature more procyclical during a period of crisis, is the way it's built. The positive action of an expected loss model could be more obvious during the boom because it reduces accounting profits, so it's constraining distribution of dividends and reduce moral hazard problems with lenders. But this all can be got through other mechanisms, not necessarily through recognition in accounting earnings. And focusing on market discipline, it is true that there is evidence that delay in expected losses recognition contributes to systemic risk. That's true. So unexpected loss model might enhance market discipline, giving more timely information about future losses. That's also true. But this positive action on market discipline will happen only if it is used properly. So it depends the way the model is used. And obviously it requires disclosures and transparency to have this positive action. So talking about that it depends on the way this model is used, this is linked with the second claim I want to discuss. It's one of your conclusions when you say that instead of using the higher level of managerial discretion offered by the IFRS 9 model to manipulate earnings, then they reduce risk-taking. Okay, can we infer from your results that managerial discretion was not used or is not going to be used in an opportunistic way to manage impairments? I think that the positive impact on risk-taking that you show in your paper does not imply no manipulation of accounting earnings necessarily, as you assume with this sentence. The answer we obtained from the previous accounting literature is that first, bank opportunistic earnings management through impairments has been always an issue. It always happened wherever the model was used, because it mostly depends on external factors, which are not, these incentives are not necessarily related with accounting standards per se. But what is true is the higher discretion in an accounting standard increases the possibility of earnings management. Second, if we focus on IFRS 9 expected loss model compared with the incurred loss model, this standard has a normative induced increase in conservatism. But there is an increase in two types of conservatism. Unconditional, because through this system of one-day losses recognition, that's unconditional conservatism, and also conditional conservatism. So there is an earlier recognition of problems in loans with this system of IFRS 9. At the same time, IFRS 9 has increased discretion. So both type of conservatism can be higher in practice. So what we know from the empirical evidence is that conditional conservatism, so more timely recognition of losses compared with gains, on balance, has a beneficial net effect on market and contracting efficiency. However, on the contrary, unconditional conservatism is an underestimation of loans value, which, by the way, is the preference of bank regulators, because they can build reserves, but hidden reserves. So be careful, that's nothing to do with transparency. And this type of unconditional conservatism is not non-informative, allows opportunistic earnings management, and that reduces accounting quality and has a negative effect on long-term financial stability. So focusing on this preference of bank regulators of undervaluation of loans, we link with the last and third claim I want to analyze. When you say that when the supervisors are powerful, they don't incentivize banks to engage in opportunistic behavior. And my question is, does effective supervisory power disincentivize opportunistic behavior? And the answer from accounting literature is that no, to some extent. In fact, I analyzed the same papers you mentioned in your paper, but from another angle about what these papers say. And they say first that while IAS 39 was in place, those banks who were in countries with more powerful national supervisors, they have more interference on accounting practices, worse application of IAS 39, and more income smoothing. This relation between powerful supervisors and income smoothing was moderated by the independence of bank supervisors from their governments. So the political independence of bank supervisors was in favor of the quality and less opportunistic income smoothing. And third, too much supervisory intervention to meet prudential objectives, so underestimation of loans, introduces a bias that compromises the integrity of financial reporting. So in summary, I didn't say, because I just focused on this discussion of the three claims that were controversial, but I have to say this is a very interesting and well-conducted paper with relevant contribution and implications, mostly from the prudential perspective, but also for the accounting standard setters. And it highlights interesting, controversial, and debatable issues from the accounting perspective. First, in summary, we can conclude from the accounting literature that IAS 39 was not so much implicated in the financial crisis as some claimed. The expected loss model might engage market discipline by giving more timely information about losses, but it depends on the way it is used, because higher managerial discretion allows higher opportunistic earnings management, which can have a negative effect on financial stability. And finally, too much bank supervisors, regulators' interference in accounting rules or practice might compromise integrity of financial reporting, being the political independence and an aspect to take into account. And if I want to link this, as you said, with the previous discussion in yesterday's panel, when Shu was asked if it was fine to have this guidance that the European Banking Authority issue about not applying properly IFRS 9 during the COVID crisis, well, I have to say that she said, as an answer, that they were not saying that. They were saying that they had to take into account facts and circumstances, avoiding the mechanic estimation of an impairment. And my question is, this is what they have to do always, not just under extraordinary circumstances. But anyway, thinking that, in fact, sometimes companies need guidance in extraordinary circumstances, and these are, why should the bank regulators be issuing accounting guidance? Why not the accounting enforcers? So I leave the question there. So thank you very much again for everything, and just ready for comments and questions. Thank you.